Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Post-show time on this Monday, November 26, 2018, a memorable day on the program, a memorable day here in New York City. Hi again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome to the fastest growing MMA post-show in all the land. And today on the program, on the real show, if you will, on the official show, we had Johnny Bones Jones in studio. First in-studio interview on this program on, you know, the many different variations of this program throughout the years, throughout the different ownership groups, throughout the different variations of the show. We've had one show that has been sort of consistent, but it's gone through many different iterations. Anyway, first time in seven. Yes, I said 7 years. I originally said eight, but it's actually seven. And we shall reminisce. In fact, the last time Johnny Bones Jones was in studio on this program was the last time New York Rick wasn't a part of this program. But he's a part of this program today, and he's sitting right next to me. Hello, New York Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Your mic isn't on.
It is. It is.
Oh, now it's on.
It's good to be on the fastest growing post show in the world.
Yes. Good to have you here. Do you recall that interview? You weren't a part of it.
I do.
The last time we did this show without you was the time John Jones was in the studio.
I do. I remember it well. I remember the set.
Yes.
Very busy monitors, yes. All kinds of things.
So let me paint the picture.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's 2011. We were just purchased. MMA Fighting was just purchased by SB Nation from AOL. And they said, we're going to continue your show. Awesome. I'm thrilled. And we're going to switch it up. Obviously, we can't be in the same studio and whatnot. So they brought me to a studio on, I think, 55th and 10th to do this show. Continue, same name, all that stuff and more. And they didn't put me in a studio. They put me in a control room. And they took my toys and they, you know, put
scattered
them all around.
Them.
Yeah. And basically, the set was the control room. Now, if you've ever been in a TV control room, you know there's a lot of monitors behind you. I've called it in the past the WWF Livewire set because they would go to Mean Gene or someone in front of the monitors and say, oh, last week in Tuscaloosa, this and that happened. And that's what it felt like. I was sitting on a director's chair,
I think. Right.
There
yeah.
was no desk in front of me. It was a total mess. And oh, by the way, in this total mess of a quote-unquote studio, John Bones Jones is stopping by. He's promoting UFC 140, which was happening that weekend in Toronto. It was a total mess. I remember Dan Miller was on the show. Ariane Celeste was on the show.
Yeah.
It was a who's who. It was a great... Who else? I think Joseph Benavidez may have been on as well. But John Jones was in studio, and there were technical problems, streaming problems, all kinds of problems. And it was just a mess. I was so depressed. I thought the show was dead that night. Like, when I went home, I was like, all right, well, it was a good run. We did it for 2 years. We're dead. We're never going to do this. And then we moved. You came on board. You righted the ship, so
I
to
mean,
speak.
I don't want to take all the credit.
Day.
But...
You seized the moment, all that and more. But it's kind of funny to have him back.
Yeah.
7 years later, a lot has happened in the last 7 years.
We've had him on, but in person.
Yeah, yeah.
Seven years in between.
Unbelievable, right?
What a journey he's been on.
And we've been on too.
That's true as well.
I haven't gone to jail or done things like that.
No. Neither have I.
Well done.
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
Well done.
We did it.
I thought today was
what'd you
one
think
of the
of
best.
John? He was very look. We've been doing this thing with John where we're trying to decide: is this the real John? Is this not the real John?
Sure.
Should he be the real John?
That's always the conversation.
And I think back to the last time I did a really long interview with him was when we were in Albuquerque, which interestingly enough he didn't really remember, at least not initially. And I remember, if memory serves me correct, he said he was sober, that he was into marijuana, but not so much. Now he just really came out and said, "I'm not sober and I still drink and I still smoke pot." To me, that was the most interesting part of all of this, because I think a lot of people were hoping that he would say that after what happened last year and what he's been through throughout his adult life. And in a way, like, you know, I don't have a real opinion on whether he should be doing that or not.
Right.
I'm just kind of surprised that he was that open
sure.
with his current situation.
I definitely, that part caught me off guard because I think the expectation is that he's supposed to be rehabbing himself. And I think the association with narcotics and alcohol and things like that would be something that most people would expect him to say, no, I'm completely sober. Like Smolka, who needs to be.
Yeah, kind of funny to have those two interviews.
He absolutely was in a place where he needed to be sober. I think John Jones, and I'm not surprised that he doesn't remember the last interview, because I think there was so much going on, and I think there was so much focus and attention and so much stress that he needed to handle and kind of bundle up in rehabbing his image, that I don't think he remembers many of the things that were going on then, because it was such a whirlwind that was kind of surrounding him. Today he seemed like a completely comfortable man. He seemed like some, to me, the fact that he was so quick with his responses, felt so natural, felt like he was just having a conversation, was not the John Jones that we get sometimes. Now, sometimes, you know, you get John Jones, the performer, who's acting for the crowd and performing. You get the John Jones who's, you know, trying to portray a certain straight-laced image. This one felt to me, it's cliche and it's passe, as you said, the real John Jones. He felt as comfortable as I've perceived him from the outside. Now, you never know. That could be completely acted up. That could be completely something that he is summoning. But I thought he was as comfortable as I've seen him. And the sobriety thing was a perfect example for him to go that path where it's like, no, I'm completely sober. But it seems like he's tried that and it didn't work. And he's able to maintain this current lifestyle and keep himself in check. And he's comfortable with it.
I'm happy he didn't lie. I felt the most real part of the interview wasn't even the part where he talked about his sobriety. I felt like it was the part that he talked about Daniel Cormier. That, to me, is when he feels his most comfortable, because he knows what he did to DC. He knows in his mind how much better he is than DC. And I feel like he's able to just sit back and tell it like it is in his mind.
I feel the opposite.
Really?
I feel like that's when he got the tightest.
Really?
Talking about DC.
What?
And I'll tell, to me, or not, maybe not the tightest, but that's when he tensed up. That's when he wasn't just at ease. When you said, you know, that DC acknowledges that he's 0-2 against John Jones, he could have said sure and left it
was
at that.
Was I wrong? But
no, I
feel like he pretty much acknowledges that he's lost to him twice.
But, and John's counterpoint that he will put the asterisk, he will put the caveat, and in John's mind, he knows he beat him twice. And there is no asterisk and there is no caveat. He's 0-2 in the octagon against him. Feeling that and feeling the need to express that, to me, was when he got the most, I don't know what the word is. It's not that he was uncomfortable.
Tentative?
That something in him still feels some kind of way about it.
Yeah.
That he's not just, you know, blasé and relaxed and leaning back and in a different posture. That gets him a little bit.
Really?
Tight. And I like
the complete opposite.
No, I sense that he can dismiss Daniel Cormier, you know, verbally, but I think there's still something there that feels like he has unfinished business with Daniel Cormier.
Interesting.
Because I think he is sick of Daniel Cormier feeling like he has unfinished business with John Jones when he feels that he doesn't.
Right.
So I think that gets to John.
And do you think they fight again?
Yeah, there's no doubt. They have to.
Yeah.
How could they not fight again?
I feel like it's going to happen in July.
I could see John trying to delay
prolong it.
Yeah, prolong it.
Just to
mess with DC.
Yeah.
Not because I'm not going to, oh, John Jones is scared. John Jones doesn't want to fight. John Jones is, in my opinion, the best fighter on the planet. He's not scared of anybody. But I think he would mess with DC. I think he would prolong it just to drag it out and have DC get older and more upset about the fact that he's not fighting John Jones.
Does it have to be at light heavyweight? Because I don't feel like it does. I'd actually prefer to see it at heavyweight. Did I say light heavyweight or heavyweight?
You said it right. Would like to see it at heavyweight.
Yes.
I don't think it has to be, but I don't think there's any way Daniel Cormier wants it to be at heavyweight. I think Daniel Cormier wants to right his wrong at light heavyweight. I don't think. Now, does John Jones, John Jones has talked in the past about fighting at heavyweight. Seems like now he's focused on reestablishing himself at light heavyweight, and I think he'll be able to successfully do that. But I don't think DC would want that fight at heavyweight. Not because I think DC would have an advantage at heavyweight. I don't think John Jones would be particularly at a disadvantage there, but I think DC is better at heavyweight. That's how I truly feel.
Absolutely.
I think he not having to manage that weight cut, the power translates. I think he'd be very good at heavyweight, but I think he is such a competitor that he will want that one back. The same way we've seen with any rematch, Conor McGregor wanted to fight Nate at 170. That fight did not need to be at 170, but because he wants to get that one back, that's where it is. I think DC will want it to be at light heavyweight.
All right, well, I have plenty of time to talk about all that in the weeks leading up to 232.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, the numbers are starting to get a little murky.
There's a lot of events.
Yep. A lot of events. I think I'm getting older and my mind is turning into mush. But let's talk about this past weekend. Yep. You disagree. I said this to you when I came in. I said it is very rare that there's a UFC card over the weekend and that's not the top story on Monday.
Sure.
But Golden Boy was the top story. You disagreed. Or were you just being a contrarian for the sake of being?
No, I mean,
that was a top story.
Top story, yes. I mean, it was the most covered, but I don't even know how to describe it. I don't even know what I watched.
Okay, that's interesting you put it that way, because 2 weeks ago on this program,
yeah,
I swallowed my pride. I made the very difficult decision to announce to the world, to publicly reveal that while the great Yair Rodriguez fight was going on,
yes,
against Korean Zombie, and while he was pulling off the greatest finish ever, I was sleeping. Yep. I missed it. And I will forever have a different relationship to that fight because I didn't see it in real time. Saturday night, when Tito Ortiz was knocking out Chuck Liddell, what were you doing?
I was asleep.
Unbelievable.
I was asleep.
How could you miss that?
I fell asleep right after Deron Wynn's fight.
Wow. And when did you wake up? Did you wake up in the middle of the night?
Yeah, 5 a.m.
Check your phone?
Like, check my phone. Wanted to see what I missed. And one of those that I had to go back and watch because I have to go back and watch.
You watched it in its entirety.
Wasn't excited to go back and yeah, do that.
See, after that's a weird one to watch after knowing the result because you heard how bad it was.
I saw all the responses on Twitter and I didn't feel the urge to have to go back. But obviously this is the profession. I have to see the result of that. I have to see what happened. And it was as described.
It was uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable to watch a guy who's once so great at what he did be in the cage,
yeah,
and look like he did not know what to do.
And he didn't. He didn't have the reflexes. He didn't have the acumen. He didn't have any of the things required to be able to stop Tito Ortiz from doing what he needed to do.
And I disagree with John Hackelman's assessment. I don't think Tito looked that great. Now, Tito's never been the quickest puncher.
Yeah.
He's never been the most powerful puncher. But I don't think – I didn't walk away from that saying Tito Ortiz should still fight. Like even though he's coming off a win, he made,
yeah,
money, whatever. I think it's a very smart move for Tito to retire. And I knew – I mean I was just watching it. I was watching it with my wife and she's like, oh, Tito's going to win. Like you could just tell,
yeah,
Tito looks younger. He looks fitter,
oh,
right?
Absolutely.
It was hard to watch.
No.
I was just bummed out afterwards.
Certainly bummed out. Imagine watching it the day after you already know what to expect. But yeah, I wouldn't say Tito looked, you know, amazing. I'm not dying to see him back. I wouldn't say he looked bad either. It was somewhere in the middle. It looked like he was in there with an overmatched Chuck Liddell.
I felt like he could have finished him earlier.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, he's putting his hands down and asking him to punch him in the face, which is not something you would see out of a Tito Ortiz fight,
right,
typically. It's not on the feet long enough to typically see something like that. But Chuck, at a certain point, it may be the 3 minute mark, Tito realized that Chuck actually had nothing for him and put it into finish mode.
It's rare that we've seen those situations play out in MMA. We've seen them,
yeah,
dozens of times, if not hundreds of times in boxing at different levels where the guy is sticking around too long, looks,
yep,
like a shell of his former self. We're going to see many more. I mean, we've seen it with BJ Penn.
Yair versus BJ Penn
was
one of those for sure.
So we're going to keep seeing this. This is not a one-time thing, this is not a new thing for combat sports. But this one, like, I don't know. I don't know if it was because he was doing it against Tito. I don't know if it was the layoff. My general take on it is, look, I'm sad watching that, but I'm not sad for Chuck, if that makes sense. Like, it bums me out, but I'm not sad for him because this was a conscious decision on his part. 8 years removed. It wasn't like a promoter was pushing him out there to do it again.
No.
Like, he went out and looked for this fight.
He sought this fight.
And then he tried to sell it to a promoter, right? He tried to get someone at that. And then he tried to sell it to the public. So it wasn't like, oh, perfect example. BJ Penn versus Yair Rodriguez. Like, to me, the UFC was to blame. And I know people are going to say, like, oh, of course you're going to blame the UFC. And like, no. Very smart people in the UFC put that fight together.
Yeah.
And thought that that was a great idea to build Yair. This fight didn't have to happen. This was all Chuck's doing. No one coerced him into doing this, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm sad that it ended like that, but I'm not necessarily sad for him because he made his decision. It's like if someone murders someone, right? I know this is very drastic, but like,
yeah.
I'm not, and you end up life in jail. I know that you may have been a good person, but I'm not necessarily sad for you because you made that choice,
yeah.
Right? He went out there and made that choice. No one pushed him to do that. No one tried to trick him. No one tried to dangle a lot of money. He did that to himself. And in the end, you gotta live with your own. I mean, he's
sure.
A grown man. He's almost 50 years old.
Yeah, we can accept the consequences of that as Chuck has and still be sympathetic. You know, he was in control of his own destiny there.
I've said that he doesn't recognize it.
Well,
that bumps me out.
As you said, and not only will we see this again, we will see this more and more. Yeah. As this sport continues to age, we will see a lot more of this as the fighters that we saw who were in their 20s and 30s are now entering their 40s and 50s. We are going to be seeing a lot more of this. The basis for this fight, though, the foundation of this was that these two were supposed to be here.
Yeah.
When in actuality, Tito's here and Chuck is here.
Right.
That's the
Which
problem.
Which wasn't the case, right? When they were fighting
no.
in 2006,
yeah,
Chuck that was much better.
That was an even fight, but not even in terms of skill, but in terms of diminished like physicality. Like Tito has even, you know, after surgeries and all the things he's been through physically, has kept himself active and kept in shape here. Chuck is 8 years removed from that, looking fantastic in terms of physique. But when we saw the pad work, we knew that that was not the fighter that was going to be there. And we're going to see a lot more of that. And it's unfortunate unless something drastically changes, unless there's a system in place for these fighters to be consulted and removed from these fights, whether it's the commission, their trainers, their families, whoever is in charge
of that.
Yeah, but
it's impossible to stop them from making money or trying to make money, right? Because in no other walk of life, you know, even in basketball, right?
Yeah.
Amari Stoudemire is playing in Jerusalem.
Stephon really?
Marbury. Yeah, he's been there for a couple
wow.
of years. So Stephon Marbury's playing in China, of course,
yeah.
right? I mean, you can't stop someone from trying to earn a living. In this particular sport and in combat sports, you have the athletic commissions who could say, we're not going to license you.
Yeah.
But there's always going to be someone
who will.
Or there's going to be a jurisdiction that doesn't have an athletic
commission.
Yeah. So there's always a way around it. In this particular case, it happened in California. And I don't necessarily want to blame California because I do think that California, and in particular the executive director of the California State Athletic Commission, Andy Foster, they are the gold standard. They really are. I did reach out to Andy Foster and asked him what he thought of it and asked him if he regretted licensing Chuck. I've not heard back from him.
Sure.
That may mean a million different things. But I do wonder if he regrets it.
Yeah.
And I do wonder if he regrets having
now,
it.
It's very easy to do in hindsight.
Yeah.
Leading into the fight, I didn't think that there was much griping. In fact, I saw much more griping about Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva than I saw about Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz.
Is that because it's young versus old, and in this case it was old versus old?
This is what we were presented, but in actuality it was actually Tito was here and Chuck was here, unfortunately.
Okay, this is a very nice segue on your part, I must
say. There you
go. I wasn't planning on getting into it, but let's just get into it here for a
sure.
second. I am surprised at the outrage over that fight.
I'm a little bit surprised, but I think there's a tendency, and this happens a lot, and we actually talked about this 2 weeks ago, interestingly enough, when a high-level grappler or a high-level striker comes into MMA from their sport, there is a tendency to overestimate, to overinflate their talent and think that they are so dangerous that they cannot be stopped, that they are inhuman in terms of what their ability is. And I think that is happening with Israel Adesanya. Amazing striker, clearly one of the top strikers that exists in the UFC. But let's be real here. Anderson Silva is not going to die, is not going to...
Yeah, so why is everyone freaking out?
It's an overestimation. It is this tendency to, Israel Adesanya is now the greatest striker who's ever lived. He's going to murder Anderson Silva. It's not the reality of what's going to happen. Certainly, I think Israel Adesanya is going to style on Anderson Silva. I think he's going to make that one look easy. He's not in any mortal danger. It's a fight. Anderson Silva is going to be fine. I don't think it's something to be up in arms about. I think it's a fine fight. But yeah, Israel Adesanya is going to be a big favorite, and he's going to win that fight. It's not any more than that. It's not any bigger a deal than that. Anderson Silva is older and will be fine.
I'm very befuddled by the reaction.
Sure.
Because this is the fight game. This sort of thing, this exact thing happens time and again. Not only in MMA, not only in boxing. It's like pro wrestling 101. What happened there? Let me just, okay. It's like pro wrestling 101.
On the way out,
young guy goes over.
Yeah.
Now, in this case, they can't script it, but like, this is not the, I mean.
No.
By the way, this isn't Yair versus BJ.
I think this is significantly less.
Yes.
Offensive as a matchup than that was.
So what would people prefer? Because and by the way, not for nothing, Anderson Silva, while, he has been out for a bit, it will be 2 years in between fights.
Yeah.
He is coming off a win. Now, yeah. I thought it was a pretty
controversial
fight,
yeah.
and I thought Derek Brunson did deserve to win, but he is coming off a win.
Yeah.
So, and not over like a bum.
No, Derek Brunson is the last guy that Israel fought.
Yes. And at that point, he was on a
massive streak. Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm surprised. Like, that's what the fight game is all about. The young guy again. And Israel, how old is Israel, by the way? He's not that young.
No, he's in his late 20s.
He hasn't hit 30 yet?
No, I don't think so.
Let's see.
He is 29.
He is 29.
Yeah, 29.
Thank you for that. So he's turning 30 in July.
Yeah. He's not the 21-year-old pup that's coming in to slaughter. I don't have an objection with the fight. My big gripe with the fight is that it doesn't do anything for Israel Adesanya. But
what?
Hear me out. He is somebody who needs to escalate, needs to continue to get harder and harder fights. If he wants to improve his MMA game. I'm not talking about the beating of Anderson Silva will not increase his profile. Certainly Anderson Silva is a matchup that will do that for him. This is a step down from Derek Brunson, in my opinion. I don't think there's any doubt there. This is a step down from Derek Brunson. This is a fight that will fill the gap.
Competition-wise,
this is a fight that will fill the gap so that when the title shot after Whitaker and Gastelum resolve their title fight, he will be able to insert himself into that conversation.
You think he gets a title shot?
I do.
Yeah.
I think this is perfectly setting it up for that. Unfortunately. Yeah. Well, Jacare has botched the big ones.
But I don't know what he's thinking. He told Guilherme Cruz, I'm going to wait. You're not getting a title shot.
No, he needed to fight, and I believe he was offered Israel and should have taken it. But it doesn't do anything from a building higher and higher level. Now, we talked about this previously. Conor McGregor did a similar ascent. But to me, I think Israel needs to continue to climb that ladder and see tougher MMA competition. To me, this is not that fight. But look, he's going to get a big profile win if I'm picking the fight. He's going to make some good money, and then he's fighting in Australia. A title shot. And it lines up well.
And he's fighting on the same card as the middleweight title fight.
Yeah, I don't have a gripe with the fight. I want to see Israel Adesanya's game advance because I feel like as he's taking these steps up, his game has raised a level, and I would like to see that continue. This to me is going to be a showcase, and it's not going to add anything to his game.
I just don't feel Anderson is that bad. He's obviously not as good as he once was.
Certainly.
I just don't feel like he's that bad.
No, well, I mean, he's taken some tough fights.
But he hasn't been embarrassed. Look at his last few fights. Derek Brunson won, but I remember scoring it in favor of Brunson.
I think
Cormier
well.
Fight, yeah, which is a wash.
A loss to Daniel Cormier.
Yeah, but when he took that fight on a week's notice.
He's a middleweight.
Yes. Bisping.
Yeah.
Some people thought he won. I thought he lost, but super close fight. Wasn't knocked out or anything like that.
He pretty much finished Bisping in the third round.
Nick Diaz.
Yep.
No contest, but a win. And then the two Weidman fights. Of course, he hasn't fought that much, but he hasn't been embarrassed in any of these fights.
I agree. We're on the same page on this.
Yeah.
One. Absolutely. I think this fight is fine.
But where I disagree with you is I do think this is a step up.
Interesting.
Because it's a step up in stage. It's Anderson.
Sure, the outside
things. There's an
aura
there. So let's see how he performs. So it's a – look, Israel has been fighting for a very long time, both in kickboxing and now in MMA. He is getting better. Like, I was very impressed with his game against Derek Brunson. Takedown defense and whatnot. But I feel like at this juncture, you have to be somewhat careful with him, especially because, let's be honest, not a lot of money is being made in the middleweight division right now outside of Australia. Like, they could go to Australia with Robert Whittaker, but, you know, Chicago, these places, like, he's not a big draw. So you need to build someone up.
Yeah.
You need a fresh face. You need a dynamic personality in and out of the cage. He's that guy.
Agreed.
So now you have to be strategic. Do you put him in there against a Jacare? Now what are you left with? Jacare, who's lost to both of those guys.
Yeah.
So I like the fight. I think the fight makes sense.
Move.
I feel like it is the fight to make. If he wasn't going to get, like, I was reading all the comments. I was like, what? All these people.
Well, what is the alternative? Jacare, is that the fight that? I don't even know what is the alternative.
That was the fight. To me, that was the
fight.
This
is the fight.
If he wasn't getting a title shot, if he wasn't the replacement guy and just going to make weight, that's the fight.
Yeah. The timing lines up that this works perfectly. There's not a reason not to do it.
Anderson Silva has not been embarrassed. He has not been knocked out. He's not going around there like slurring his words and all this stuff.
What could happen though in hindsight is if he gets styled on, all of a sudden it's like, oh, how could you make this fight?
I don't see it happening. But maybe I'm wrong.
I think Israel will make it look pretty relatively easy. There are levels to this, and Israel's striking is different.
Yeah.
And Anderson Silva's reflexes are not what they used to be. So I think I don't think he will be in trouble in this fight. But I also don't. Let's calm down on you know, calling the ambulance.
It is funny how people were so up in arms on Anderson's behalf and didn't seem all that worried about Chuck. Like the whole Chuck thing was almost met like. I don't know. I feel like it was the butt of a joke. That's the way the people perceived it.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is fair to either of them.
Well,
like overall, the Golden Boy thing, you know, like I know I went on my rant on Wednesday about Oscar, and I think he was embarrassing. I mean, like, I don't know what's going on with Oscar De La Hoya. You know, I don't pay attention to him as much in the boxing world.
Sure.
I know that they put on, you know, Canelo fights and whatnot, but I've never seen someone so uninterested in the product that they were trying to sell than what I saw from Oscar on Tuesday at that press conference. I mean, I don't know what was going on there with the cold. And I mean, it was, the whole thing was bizarre. It was bizarre behavior. And didn't know the product, didn't know the fighters, didn't sell them the right way, this, that, and more. But on Saturday, it was a fine show. I mean, it certainly wasn't worth $40. The debacle with that Black Friday thing was embarrassing.
Yeah. Fight TV had the promotion for half price, and then they had to nix it.
Take it back. Like I said on the show, I thought Duran one was great.
Yeah.
I'm not buying that they're going to stick around. Tito seems to be very gung-ho that they're sticking around. Do you think they're sticking around?
They could. I just don't think it would be anything based on this fight that happened. I don't think the pay-per-view is going to do particularly well. The gate seemed...
He said 200.
By the way,
200K, he said. I think he said 200K,
he did,
not 200.
He did.
No, but I think he might have just said two. Anyway, I know he meant 200K. Yeah. Let me just say, pay-per-view numbers aren't public, but we kind of know what they all do. If that got 200, that would be the most for any non-Zuffa show. Because I think off the top of my head, the WEC pay-per-view did around like 120, and that was Faber versus Aldo in their prime. Yeah. And no one else has ever come close. Like even Affliction, I think, did... They claim around 100. 200 would be shocking.
It'd be massive.
In this day and age, with piracy and whatnot, I don't think it's doing 200. My prediction was 10K.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that was much closer to the actual number. I can't imagine. But if they are going to continue, it's because they did want to continue this, and it's not based on this one fight.
I don't know if I want them to continue, to be honest. Just because of who's – like if it really is Oscar, I mean, it's just embarrassing. It really is.
I went back and I watched the initial press conference to announce it.
Oh, yeah.
With Chuck and Tito.
Yeah. That one in Las Vegas, right?
It was the same press conference.
It was.
Which is the startling part because you would think you would have learned about these fighters and been able to tell a more compelling story. But it was the exact same press conference. And that was the indicator to me that nothing was, you know,
and also this whole thing that, oh, you know, I want the fighters to make more and whatnot.
The headliners.
Yeah, only the headliners.
In fact, getting a cut of the paper.
Someone, and I apologize, I forget who it was, compared, you know, like a lot of the name guys who have fought in the UFC and whatnot, compared what they made on Saturday to what they've made in the past. And for a lot of them, it was less.
Yeah.
So
I believe it may have been Ian Kidd of Bloody Elbow, but forgive me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Who did compare any of the people who fought in the UFC, their last purses, and they were higher.
It's crazy that we're focusing so much time, and I feel like, you know, it's warranted, but the Beijing card was great.
Yeah.
Ngannou with the big win, Alistair Overeem with the big win, Smolka had an awesome story, and a nice redemption victory. Wei Li Zhang.
Yeah.
If I'm saying it correctly, and I do believe I am because I asked her manager, Brian Butler. She is a superstar in the making.
Her style is something.
I thought that was a great show. It happened while most of the world was sleeping, or at least the Western world.
So you said I disagreed, and my thought was that the big story, because I still don't know what to make of Golden Boy, was the return of Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
He looked back. He looked like himself.
Good stoppage?
I could see it going longer, but that's, to me, yes. Yes, it could have gone longer, and yes, I think Curtis Blaydes would have wanted it to go longer, but to me, that was the beginning of the end. But you do have to, I think you have to let the fighter try to fight out of it. So yes, to me, a little bit premature, but I don't think we would have seen anything different. That was the beginning of the end. When Francis hits people like that, it is over.
Yeah.
That is the end. And good for him. And I picked Curtis Blaydes going into the fight. I thought
you picked him in a big way, right?
I thought he would finish Francis. I thought he'd be able to drag him into deep waters. Now, certainly with the understanding that this could happen, this outcome, there's no doubt that Francis has game-changing power. But I thought Curtis would be able to avoid his power a little bit more, and he seemed to be going right into it. And that's not what you want to do against Francis.
There's a lesson here. In this game, especially at heavyweight, shouldn't write people off this quickly. I felt like wrote off Francis Ngannou after the Derek Lewis fight. Which, by the way, he didn't get like smoked or embarrassed. He embarrassed himself.
Both parties in that fight did not fight. That's what we saw.
So, and then the other fight was he gassed out against Miocic.
Yeah.
Lest we forget, 11 months ago, you know, he was almost decapitating Alistair Overeem. So I wasn't buying into the narrative that he was done. But there was no doubt. Like, this was a must-win for him.
He seemed gun-shy, and this fight he did not. He seemed like he was ready to strike.
And I like the slimmer Francis Ngannou.
Sure. He looked great.
He looked much better.
He looked
better.
Fantastic.
Quicker.
That was my thought coming out of the confident weekend was, I like to see Francis back.
All eyes on me playing, doing the He just seemed comfortable.
Yeah.
Like in Vegas, it felt like the moment was getting to him. It felt like he was overthinking things. I didn't even necessarily feel like the moment was getting to him in Boston against Miocic. I just think he got tired and wasn't in the best shape. In Vegas, it seemed like he was thinking too much.
I want to just say, I don't think enough credit is given to Stipe in that fight. It's not just that he didn't have the gas tank.
Sure.
That game plan that he executed, and he took some shots to be able to do it, to pressure him, to push him against the cage, to show him different looks, to take him down. That was something that you need to do against a striker as good as Francis. That's the type of game that I don't think Curtis Blaydes has just yet, and that's why we saw it. It's not as easy as you can just wrestle Francis Ngannou. You have to be able to also avoid the power shots and show him looks that make him not want to throw. And Stipe was able to do it, and Curtis was not.
Yeah, what a win. I believe the best fight for him next is the winner of JDS versus Tai Tuivasa. He's focusing on JDS because, remember, they were supposed to fight in Edmonton.
Yeah.
I think that was top of my head. Wait, don't tell me. 215.
Jake, confirmation, please.
Yep, 215 in Edmonton last September. But he's not focusing on Tai. Agree or disagree?
I think JDS is going to win that fight.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In fact, that's one of my picks.
That's the fight this weekend in Adelaide, Saturday to be exact, because there's two UFC fight
cards. There's two UFC fight cards. I like JDS in that fight.
I think it's a little.
Junior is minus 145. Tai is plus 125.
Wow.
Not surprised that it's close. I think this is a very major step up for Tai, a very big step up. And I think Junior is going to be able to avoid the power and get it done.
I love this fight.
Tai has game-changing power. It's not dissimilar to what you have to be concerned about with Francis. He has that one-hitter quitter. Now, it's taken him longer to get some of the guys out of there, so I don't know if it's quite on that level. And that's why I think JDS will be able to weather the storm if he does have to. But I think JDS is actually one of the guys that you're talking about who's written off a little bit prematurely. At heavyweight, this is not a game where if you lose one or two in a row, all of a sudden you're out of it and you're shot. I think Junior is going to be back to form and be able to get it done.
Well, he's coming off a nice win over Blagoy.
Yep.
And then he had the layoff. But prior to that, he had the win. He just had a really long layoff. But he's actually looked good, I think, in his last couple fights.
He's not Junior who is the champion. That's certainly clear.
But he's not getting knocked out.
He's
winning.
Yeah.
He's showing patience.
I think there is still concerns with his game, but I think he will be able to beat Tai Tuivasa. That is where I ultimately land. Tai's dangerous, but I think Junior will be able to get it done.
What about our old friend Alistair?
And I would love to see Junior versus Francis, by the way. I like that fight.
Okay.
I would like to see more Alistair versus Francis, but it doesn't do anything for Francis.
That's already?
I'm game.
Wow.
I would be game to see it.
I feel like it's a little too soon for that.
Man, Overeem.
Let Overeem get a couple more. Let him build himself back up.
That performance was top notch.
Yeah.
That was elite level striking that you saw. That was, and credit to Alistair Overeem for fighting a guy who was very dangerous but didn't have the name recognition. He said he had to look him up, you know, when he was offered the fight. He didn't know who he was. Credit to him for taking a very dangerous fight. That wouldn't have, you know, this is not going to be the one that everybody's going to go, oh yeah, he beat Pavlovich. Like, that is not the fight that you know, people will recall and go back to. So credit to him for taking it, and not only taking it, looking aces.
Amazing.
An incredible fight. I would like to see it. I would like to see Overeem versus Ngannou. But from Francis's perspective, why? Why would you ever have to do that or want to do that?
It's to a much lesser degree, but it's the same line of thinking as Conor and Aldo. If you win in that kind of fashion, it makes no sense to try to recreate it.
You don't need to, no.
You know, I have to say this about Alistair Overeem. I feel like throughout his career, he's been given the label of, like, egotistical, bad teammate, you know, just feels himself too much and just isn't a great guy to be around. Has anyone changed teams more than this guy and has just sort of adapted to different scenarios? Like, Albuquerque is much different than being in Florida, is much different than being at elevation in Denver, to being in the Netherlands, to being in Thailand. The guy is, it's amazing how, first of all, it's interesting. I don't know if it's a positive thing necessarily, but it's interesting how many times he's changed over the past few years. But I think it's remarkable how he's able to adapt with new people around him, new coaches, new teammates, and continue to have a very successful career.
Well, not only that, but multiple weight classes.
Yeah.
Based in multiple different countries, as you said.
Yeah.
Multiple different styles. There was the time where he was a much different stand-up striker than he is now. Much less picking shots, more power.
Also, a lot more submissions.
Grappling.
In the earlier portion of his career.
He has had so many different lives in MMA.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And been successful in so many different arenas. He really is. He will be a case study at some point.
Well, there was like the Uberim era. There was the Strikeforce era. There was the Pride era. The light heavyweight
now he's
era.
The Wiley veteran.
The K1 era. Like, the guy.
He won a Grand Prix.
It's unbelievable how many times he's reinvented himself. It really is.
And he looked as good as ever, I would say.
And I feel like after the Blades fight, I feel like everyone was like, okay, this is the beginning of the end. And, you know, let's be honest, Pavlovich, as you said, isn't, you know,
isn't a name, but very dangerous.
But was coming off a very long streak,
was
somewhat highly touted going into this fight, and I think someone that they thought maybe they could build off of Overeem.
Sure. Nope.
The Ream.
Getting
still
it done.
Around. And it's more fun when the Ream is winning.
I agree.
It's a good heavyweight
Overeem
division.
Is a great character.
That was a really successful night for the UFC in terms of the heavyweight division. To get Ngannou and Overeem back, those were the guys that I think they needed to win. I don't think it's necessarily the guys they thought was going to win.
Although Blades had some momentum. I think if he gets that win, there's you can push him.
Ngannou is someone that you can get behind more. Right?
The style. The style is different. Blades is not that guy. Although that TKO in his last fight definitely opened some eyes. But I think there's no doubt that in terms of, you know, stand-up strikers, those are the two that have the most appeal.
Okay, so two UFC cards this weekend, two Bellator cards, KSW, LFA. There's a lot going on. There's maybe too much going on. I don't recall there ever being two UFC and two Bellators on the same weekend, Friday, Saturday, Friday, Saturday.
That is a lot of MMA.
Best fight this weekend?
Huh. You'd have to – I'm only looking at the odds right now, so you'd have to refresh me on who else is on the Bellator card. I know you said it.
The Bellator prelims on Friday are really good. Kamaru Usman versus RDA.
Is it too hipster to say Alex Perez and Joseph Benavidez?
Oh my God.
Is that too hipster?
I mean, jeez, really? Are you serious? Right
I really like that fight.
Oh my God. I mean, it's a good fight.
I really like that fight.
Paying respects to the little guys.
Oh, come on, Jake. Really?
I mean, look.
Perez, Benavidez? Is that even on the main card?
You could say Usman and Dos Anjos, but I don't think
that's a high-level fight.
I don't think
that
would be particularly competitive. I think Usman is gonna cruise.
Wow.
In fact, okay, so
who's the favorite?
Usman is minus, at the moment, minus 275. Dos Anjos is plus 235. Oh. So I gave, from the the fight that's headlined by Dos Anjos and Dos Santos and Tuivasa, I gave Dos Anjos. From the other card, I'm going Usman in a parlay with Tim Means. That's my other pick for that other card. Tim Means facing Ricky Rainey. He's minus 385. Rainey is plus 295. I just think, even though Means has been on a skid in the UFC, I think that's a different level of competition. So I like Means and Usman. Yeah, I don't think Dos Anjos is going to be able to keep Usman off him. Now, he's not as active on the feet as Colby Covington is. And Colby Covington essentially blanked RDA in that fight. It was pretty clear that Covington was the better fighter. I don't think that Usman is going to be able to be as successful on the feet, but I think once he does grab a hold of RDA and get him down, that's going to be a different top game, and I don't think he's going to be able to get Usman off.
Can you do me a favor?
Yeah.
Can we get a parlay going? One fighter from the Friday tough card, one fighter from the Bellator Friday
card. I don't have odds on Bellator. They're not out yet.
At some point, they're going to come out, right?
Okay, maybe okay.
One fighter from the Saturday Bellator, one fighter from the...
One fighter from each card.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Jake, you in?
Absolutely.
Jake's going to bet it.
You do your own parlay. Eric does his own parlay. And then...
No, wait a minute.
What? And we see who made out better.
I need to consult Jake. I can't have Jake trying to compete.
Honestly, I feel like we should have done in hindsight. We've run out of time. But, I mean, should we whip together a quick draft here or what?
Oh, man. No, because...
This would have been the perfect opportunity for an international fight week.
The odds are not out on Bellator.
Just a draft.
I know, but you have to kind of know where the odds are at.
Jake? Run out of time?
That can't really be a last-minute thing.
I know.
I agree.
But it would have been a great idea.
It would have been fun.
Damn it.
A lot of MMA.
By the way, on top of all that, Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder on Saturday.
Yeah.
Woo! And we don't give them a lot of love. We don't give them a lot of shine. But KSW, the return of Mamed Khalidov after his long winning streak getting snapped. There's a lot going on this weekend. I feel like it's all sort of. I don't even think you remembered that. I think it was Jake told me he didn't remember that there was any fight. Didn't you say that you didn't know that it was UFC this weekend or something?
I did. I didn't say that.
That's amazing. And by the way, I don't blame you.
No, there's
two. I feel like it's just kind of. I mean, the tough. You know, finale.
I was looking ahead to Toronto next week.
Right.
What about you? Your fight? Is it Usman Dos Anjos? What are you
most looking forward to? Is Tuivasa JDS?
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm a big Tuivasa
Shogun
guy, JDS,
Shogun versus Tyson Pedro.
Yeah,
that's another
big fight for both of them.
Lion and Lamb, that's older and younger Lion. Mark Hunt, last fight of the UFC.
That's going to be his last fight. Yeah, big fight for Justin Willis, friend of the program. Big Pretty himself. So yeah, there's a lot to like this weekend.
There's some good fighting.
Meanwhile, all I could think about is my wife is going away and I'm going to be alone with all the kids, the dog and everything, and I'm just kind of crapping in me jocks, as Connor likes to say.
Crapping in me jocks.
Crapping me jocks for all that. So if I'm not here on Monday,
I'm ready. Put me on, coach.
We got this.
Yeah, and Jake, just stop talking about soccer, all right? It's too much soccer on the program.
There was a big soccer game this past weekend.
You know, Jake got his first taste of MMA hate from the Twitterazzi, so to speak. However, the hate was that he talks too much about soccer.
And I don't think we ever talked
I don't think
about
we've ever actually said anything about soccer on
this
show.
Cup next year,
it's unbelievable. Here it is, my Everton Cup. But yes, there is a lot. You know, I wanted to do a whole breakdown of the Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson fight.
Golfing match, yeah.
"Quote unquote fight, Matt." Well, they did the stare down and everything.
That's true. They did
like a fake weigh-in or whatever it was. But we ran out of time. That was fun. I enjoyed that.
I also like that. It didn't end up being as good as I thought it would be, but I also enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, the pay-per-view was a disaster.
I was expecting. Well, yeah, they had to refund everybody, or Bleacher Report kind of led the refunds, and then everybody else kind of followed suit. I would have liked to see more wagering between them. I would have liked to see more spicing it up a little bit.
That's because you're a degenerate.
I'm a degenerate. But it was satisfying. It came down to multiple extra holes. Yeah,
that's right.
So I was into it.
Okay, we have run out of time, Mr. New York Rick. So Jake in the back over there is getting all out of sorts because he keeps telling me to rap. We're having a good time here, Jake.
Someone's
going
to wrangle you two in.
Okay, all right. So you can hit my music whenever you want, whenever your heart desires. It has been a fun day here on the program. In fact, when we left last week, I don't like to talk about who's going to be on the show well in advance because I'm superstitious, but I did drop a hint to both New York Rick and Jake saying that there was something in the works with John Jones. And I think we all kind of agreed that it was a long shot. The fact that it happened, I'm pretty happy about it.
Not only that, but it was one of the better Ariel John Jones interviews.
Look, you know, who am I to say that? You know, you can say that if you want. I don't feel comfortable saying that. Anyhow, I want to thank all our guests who stopped by today. Thank you very much to the great John Hackleman. Wow, we could do a whole thing just on John Hackleman, just coming out there.
Yeah.
He's always been one to shoot straight, if you will. But I thought it was really interesting to hear him say now he's going to actively try to get him to stop and that he regrets not being more vocal.
His lack of involvement said everything.
Yeah, it really did. After being by his side for so many years. Thank you very much to Francis Ngannou. Congratulations to him. Thank you very much to Alistair Overeem. Congratulations to him. Thank you for coming in studio, John Jones and Carlos Silva. Good luck to Carlos and the PFL crew on December 31st. Congratulations to Luis Smolka on a massive win on Saturday. Thank you very much to Tito Ortiz. Congrats to him. And congrats to Mini DC, Deron Wynn, for his big win on Saturday. Back next week. By the way, if you missed anything, check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, all those places and more. Until they say peace, I'm out of here.